All right, welcome back. It's Wild Wednesday. Lots of things going on. In fact, speaking of things going on, there are obviously mechanisms in work underway in this mass genocide, this DNA genocide of our species, which is being, at the very least, irrevocably changed, if not corrupted. Or is it being reconfigured into a different sort of species? I don't mean we're not going to have two legs, two arms, etc. But there may be something going on here. We're going to talk about some interesting ideas coming forward in just a couple minutes. If it's okay with you, young lady.
Oh, why not?
Oh,
it's fun
why
to
not?
Speculate.
It's fun to speculate. Okay. Yes. No, it is. It is. And this could be something out of a, you know, 1960s or 1770s science fiction novel. The potentials that are here, and they are potentials. You can't deny that. But there's a lot going on here. Remember, these are genetic changing injections. The actual genocidal tools that are in these injections are permanent. They don't leave the body. You can't take a pill and reverse them. It doesn't work that way. I think most of you know that very well by now. This is a very deadly, very catastrophic thing that has been done to our species. People are dying all over the place at varying speeds. They have a, you know, they have a length of time remaining. We think there's a 2 to 5 year window for many people to manifest severe injuries after taking one of these injections. And then we have the whole issue of shedding. And we know now that shedding does transmit the spike. It does transmit the mRNA instructions that will go into your body's cells and order those cells to begin producing spike, which may last the rest of your life. We don't know. As long as they've tested, and it's been something over 2 years, they still find mRNA doing its dirt. So what's to think it's going to stop? Because among other things, what those instructions achieve is the ruination of your immune system. So what are you going to fight it with? How are you going to go back in and reconfigure what was a perfectly fine and workable set of chromosomes and DNA that's been with us for hundreds of thousands of years? It has been said that between 200,000 and 300,000 years ago, there were significant changes made in chromosome 2, which are obvious when you study them and look at them. There was a fusion there that was not normal. And that goes along with a lot of people who feel that ET or some other intelligent life force, whatever you want to call them, has been here and has been augmenting or otherwise changing, for good or worse, our DNA structure. And in other words, us. All right, I'm going to step back. Go right ahead.
Well, you know, it's bewildering when we're now 4 years into this nightmare and widely known that the spike protein is irrefutably toxic in countless ways, and yet they insist it isn't, and they won't screen blood or organ donors for it. And they also keep pushing pregnant women and young people to take these mislabeled vaccines, which in reality are gene transfections. You know, in spite of the huge increase in fetal demise and stillbirths and all the other problems that go along with it. But we would be remiss if we didn't acknowledge that some pregnancies are successful and live babies are being born, right?
We don't know what they're going to turn out to be, though. We don't know.
We don't know, you know, but they are. The pregnancies are still happening, and babies are still being born. And we're at the mercy of time to find out, you know, how healthy are they going to be down the road. But it makes me ask, is there a bigger agenda besides just killing and crippling people and causing them to be sterile?
Let me say one or two quick things to help augment this. First of all, I have a story up. Renowned gastroenterologist raises an alarm. He says the COVID shots cause autism in children. You won't usually find out if your child has autism for several years, and then the signs begin to manifest. That's just one of many things that could turn out to happen to your otherwise healthy little boy or little girl. We pray not, but this is happening. COVID shots cause autism in children. So, okay, if Erica and I, and maybe some of you who are all working together to create this genetic, destructive, horrible injection, how deep and how far would we go to build in multiple layers of mechanisms that would give us the results we want? We'd go pretty damn far. We'd be very clever, almost satanically clever, in building in varying depths of devices in these shots to either kill or otherwise maim the people that get them. That's what we would do. That's what anybody planning a weapon would do. Go ahead.
Well, particularly if you've got a license to kill, essentially, there's no liability. You can just say, oops, you know, it was experimental. We didn't mean to. So they have carte blanche to do what they want, and people are still dumb enough to believe that these things are offering some kind of protection. They're still taking them. But as I was saying, I is there a bigger agenda when you look at this? And, you know, knowing what we know about chromosome 2, it opens the doors to other possibilities. And I've asked myself, could the real reason be that it's a breeding program to alter the human race to express the protein, spike protein, for some as yet unknown purpose? And, you know, I actually began just entertaining that thought a couple years ago when it became apparent that the spike protein shares 80% homology with human proteins.
And this is very interesting. Think about it. When you say homology, define homology real quick. Define homology.
Homology means essentially identical.
Very good.
It's the same. So 80% of that spike protein is comparable, if not identical, to proteins that you would find, or peptides that you would find in the human body. And so I wondered, you know, what if that was actually intentional, and they designed it that way to be more biocompatible and less immunogenic? In other words, that people that started manufacturing this hideous thing might not react to it, because there's enough similarity in the proteins there with human proteins that maybe the body doesn't recognize it as foreign, and it will tolerate it. But, you know, admittedly, it's so toxic that it's hard to believe that, but can we totally exclude that possibility? And what would the purpose of the spike protein be anyway? And so I came up with some possibilities. I mean, this is just speculation. It's known, thanks to the Chinese researchers, that the spike is a hemocyanin homolog, meaning it's just like the oxygen-carrying protein called hemocyanin, and this is the type of protein that you would find in, crustaceans, shellfish, some insects, maybe some species of lizards, and it's a copper-based oxygen-carrying protein. And oddly enough, the spike protein has a segment on it that functions as a hemocyanin. And it's very good at binding oxygen and transporting it around. It can float freely in the bloodstream. It doesn't have to be like hemoglobin, which is actually within, or heme, which is within hemoglobin. This thing can float around and be transported just in the blood.
Let me augment what you've just said. The blood delivers oxygen to every cell in your body through hemoglobin. That's normal for mammalian animals, and we are animals, to do. Hemocyanin, which transports oxygen in crustaceans and, as you heard Erica say, other things, including apparently some reptiles, I'm not up on who has it, but it's not something that is found in normal, healthy human beings. It can coexist. It can coexist in your blood with hemoglobin. And the interesting thing about copper-based hemocyanin is that it carries about 80 times as much oxygen as hemoglobin carries to be delivered around the body.
The Chinese researchers, in this particular case, said that it was, I don't know, 94 molecules of oxygen as opposed to
that's
four?
That's huge.
With hemoglobin? Hemoglobin is an iron-based oxygen transport system, and hemocyanin is a copper-based one. And you will see the organisms that have or use hemocyanin will have blue blood when it's oxidized. If it's not oxidized, it's clear. So, because copper is blue when it's oxidized. But the Chinese researchers that identified this offered that as the explanation as to why this disease state, the initial stages of COVID, was characterized by this phenomenon known as happy hypoxia. In other words, the oxygen in their blood was very low, like shockingly low, and yet these people were not breathing heavy, didn't appear to be, you know, struggling to breathe. And sometimes the first indication that there was something wrong was when, you know, their toes started to turn black. And, you know, we can only speculate now that there's a lot of people right now that have this so-called sludge blood that's, you know, oftentimes very dark, if not also very thick, and yet they're walking around seemingly normal. And how is that? How is that blood able to bind oxygen? First of all, if it's dark, that means it's already oxidized. It's not going to take any more oxygen on.
Right.
And, you know, half the time these people have very low levels of carbon dioxide in their tissues, so it's not even going to release the oxygen if it gets to where it needs to go. So are they? I would contend that, yeah, they're probably, if they're producing spike, that spike is acting like hemocyanin, and they're oxygenating their body and tissues that way.
Something seems to be helping with this horrible sludge blood thing and the obvious limitations of hemoglobin to exist and operate in that kind of an environment. So maybe something else is transporting oxygen through this sludge-like mixture called blood, which is making the difference and allowing some people to remain alive. Otherwise, the heart, like we've suggested, will just give up 24 hours a day pushing this thick, viscous liquid through a circulatory system that in many ways can be constricted or partially clotted already with spike, messing up the endothelium. Okay, that's all on the table. It's possible. Go ahead.
Well, the downside of this hemocyanin is that it can oxidize things that, you know, should not be oxidized because it does have that copper molecule in there that it functions as something called a phenol oxidase, which you have lots of molecules in your body that are known as phenols and catechols and neurotransmitters being one, hormones, and this hemocyanin, the spike acting like hemocyanin, will just indiscriminately oxidize a lot of these molecules and cause quite a bit of problems. I won't go beyond that, but anyway, I got to thinking that, well, why, what if maybe they're thinking about a situation where humans are going to be required to live in a low oxygen and possibly cold environment. And maybe they're trying to genetically engineer some subset of people to be able to tolerate the spike protein and oxygenate themselves that way when conditions call for it.
Don't know. It's an interesting theory. Sci-fi.
If you were wanting to colonize Mars, let's say,
mm-hmm.
would it be beneficial to have hemocyanin as an oxygen carrier?
I trust very little of what NASA tells us or shows us in pictures of Mars. I've seen too many photos from the rovers up there that have smudges, smears, obvious editing all over the place, hiding debris of intelligent life construction before the big blast, whatever that was exactly. And I have another video that shows what is, in my opinion, obviously a very complex small city that was not destroyed during the big blast, whatever that was. And it appears to have been taken from a low-flying or certainly a high-res camera by one of the Mars orbiters, maybe the ESA. I don't know which one. I don't know who did it, but it's a fascinating picture. And the thing, I'm going to be putting up more here in the next day or so, but the more you look at Mars surface images from these rovers, the more you see. And it's not pareidolia. You're not making it up. There are things, perfect right angles. And that's not just dust and wind erosion. Come on. These are pieces of wreckage. And it's not to say that these long tubules that are there, and they're 1,000, what the hell are they, 1,000 yards across or something. They're big. May not hold some residual form of life on Mars. It wouldn't surprise me. I'm going to repeat this. I don't trust anything NASA does anymore by way of picture releases. They've just been caught too many times making these pictures, and they degrade the hell out of them is what they do.
Well, you had on that fellow, Dr. John
Brandenburg. Yeah, he's a Mars expert, yeah.
And I came across something that he had written or spoken in the past year, and it was concerning these aliens they call grays. And he mentioned, this really struck me, they are said to have, and this is based on autopsies that were done, that they have hemocyanin as their blood form.
That's very interesting. Do we have any? Now, he said that, and I don't know what his pedigree on that data was, but
it was research from people who had performed autopsies and determined that they have a copper-based blood.
That assumes that there have been autopsies done on dead grays, and I'm sure there have been, probably lots. We have lots of bodies, we have wreckage, we have crashed craft, we have all of it. It's all hidden, but we have it. So, yes, all kinds of biological evaluations of these beings have been done, and I trust John. I've had him on, I'll bet his first visit here was 20, 25 years ago, long time. He knows what he's doing. He's not a flake. So if he says that, yes. And also, you need to understand, when I talk about NASA corrupting images, the sky on Mars is blue. It's like our sky. It's blue. And Mars is not red. Those are color shifts intentionally done when they release a lot of these photos to make you think it's all this red rock. No, it's not. It's gray. It's all kinds of blacks and grays and whites. And it's just not, we're being lied to, okay? It's not any big surprise. Now, John Leonard Waldson is going to be on the program, I think, next week, and John Wilkie as well. They've worked together on a book on John Waldson's incredible 8-inch telescope images of not only the moon, but of big spacecraft, spaceships in deep Earth orbit. They're up there just hanging out. And they're obviously massively intelligently designed craft. This is not a surprise. One of the pictures especially shows one of these craft burned up. It obviously had a fire. Now, I know, how can it have a fire? There's no oxygen in space. Well, things can still burn. It may be oxygen from other sources. At any rate, we'll get John on. I've known John. I was the first person to really run into him and feature him on the program many, many times. So that's coming up soon. And they have a book out on these objects. They're big ships. They're big craft. I showed some of the images, maybe 10, to Bill Tompkins before he passed. And he said, "Where'd you get these?" I said, "A gentleman named John Waldson. He's got a 8-inch telescope, and he's enhanced it by interfacing it with a very an HD video camera that brings up the magnification tremendously and focuses it. And he said, those are real. Where did you get those? He asked me again. And he said, that's the real deal. They're up there. So we've had a hidden space program for a long time. And we've been all over this solar system at the least. That's my take.
Oh, I can't dispute that. But anyway, so if you wanted to send humans to distant places that might not have enough oxygen, maybe it would be beneficial to have some hemocyanin.
Think about it. That's very smart.
Produced.
Good deductive reasoning. And yes. Now, there
but
is
I can
a...
take it... yeah, go ahead.
There is a push now where people are saying copper this, you got to get copper, augment your diet with copper supplements, and yes and no. There's a downside to that.
Yeah, there is.
Go ahead.
Well, just like iron, people are thinking that it's just you put it in your body and it's going to do whatever it is you want it to do, and that's not necessarily the case. These are very carefully, tightly regulated, or they should be anyway, metals that when they're not regulated properly, there's too much or they're in the wrong place, they're not bound, they can do a lot of damage. And, it's known that with COVID, it's copper that's driving the inflammatory cascade. You know, once the spike is there and it docks onto the ACE2 and the body starts producing copious amounts of superoxide and inducible nitric oxide, you get the formation of lots and lots of reactive oxygen species, and they go around and they burn things up. And people who have more copper on board have more copper to participate in that pathology. And one of the first things copper does is, first of all, it's antiplatelet, so you will probably bleed to some extent. But it will also destroy heme. And, you know, when the heme degrades, it can promote clotting. And that's not to take anything away from the spike. The spike is also doing nasty things. But this copper has the potential to just augment this entire process because of its ability to transfer electrons.
Right.
You know, that's why we use copper for, electrical wiring.
Copper is really being pushed. Yes.
What's that?
Copper's value is going up. People are stealing copper wire. They're stripping it out of houses.
Yeah,
they're stealing it. Crazy.
I know. But it's very conductive. And, we have a lot of people now that are very sensitive to EMFs. And I would contend that that is, at least in part, an issue of too much copper. And women, because of the estrogen factor, tend to store a lot more copper than the average male. You know, you look at the bleeding issues. The bleeding issues are happening in women. Once in a while, you see, a male, adult or child, having a bloody nose or something. But it's really the women that are having this crazy menstrual bleeding, bruising in some cases. Dysregulated copper.
Well, they've been targeted, no doubt.
It's probably the spike stealing the copper. And wherever the spike goes, if it's dragging this copper around with it, as we would assume it would if it's acting like hemocyanin
right.
is binding copper, and then setting up shop in, the endometrium, the lining of the uterus, and, it's extremely inflammatory, and you're going to have a foreign body reaction, and the body's going to try to get rid of it. So just don't fall for the copper hype. Make a determination somehow or other whether or not you really need it, because just taking it doesn't ensure that you're going to use it the way you want it to be used. And the other thing excess copper can do, or unbound copper ions, is they can bind to the sulfur needed for iron sulfur clusters in the manufacturing of heme. You need iron sulfur clusters to complete the heme building process so you can make blood and heme for other purposes. And if copper's there, it will steal that sulfur because copper loves sulfur. So that's a situation where dumping more copper into your body is really going to cause more problems. But moving on, the other thing I was thinking about is, yeah.
No, that's quite an interesting thesis to put out on the table. And we don't ultimately know. We're just projecting on the basis of what we see and what science tells us that copper will do, et cetera, hemocyanin, what that will do. Mars is clearly a target. Musk is obsessed with getting to Mars. I have a sneaking suspicion that Mars is completely rehabilitatable. Most of the water that was on that planet, and I think 40% of Mars was covered by water. I think Earth is like 70. But Mars is 40% water coverage. That water's still there. It's under the ground. And there are people talking about bringing the water back up, doing things to enhance oxygen production and all that. I have a hunch there's quite a bit more oxygen in Mars' atmosphere right now than most people would even imagine. I think so. I just see too many things in Mars that are being hidden from us, and it's really disgusting. I mean, you know, so who gives NASA the right, again, to tell us what we can know and we can see? And we have a God-given right to understand the world around us. And this government is supposed to be in service to that goal, among many others, but it's not.
No, all right. It's anyway. A criminal enterprise at this point.
Yes, ma'am. Go ahead.
Well, okay, so then we have to deal with or wonder about the extreme inflammation and oxidation that go along with exposure to the spike protein. And, you know, it can be bad enough that it mimics ionizing radiation. That's how much damage is being done as a result of the presence of the spike protein. You know, the lipid peroxides right. will, you know, just keep this vicious cycle of oxidizing, well, whatever, lipids, proteins, you know, nucleotides. The autopsies early on were almost indistinguishable from people who had been irradiated with ionizing radiation. So this is a type of damage that this spike protein can do because of the way that it antagonizes the immune system to react in such an inflammatory way. So you get massive production of free radicals, both oxygen-free radicals and nitrogen-free radicals. And, you know, we're seeing the consequences of that. I mean, people are just ravaged by this thing.
You turn into a walking inflammation factory is what you end up.
You're basically being cooked.
Right.
From the inside out. It's just a slow barbecue. But let's just, you know, entertain the idea that maybe they're trying to select for people who can withstand this. And by virtue of that, if they can withstand this type of severe oxidative stress with, you know, no apparent consequence,
right.
would they be able to withstand cosmic radiation? In other words, if we put them on a ship and sent them out to, well, wherever, they, you know, could they withstand better than what we could now, you know, a radiation assault?
I think they could make clothing, so to speak, that would help diminish any risk of UVB, UVA, UVC. Go ahead.
Well, wouldn't it be nice to have that protection built in where, you know, if you didn't remember your jacket that day, you're still okay?
Yeah. Your point is that they may be engineering us to be something different
resistant
than we are now and able to serve their purposes better. Yes. Super soldiers.
If you wanted
soldiers.
To colonize a distant planet, these are things you might, think about.
I hope we don't. We don't deserve it. This is a destructive species right now, controlled by utter destruction. These people are not enlightened, kind people that run this planet right now. No.
You know, there is a gene already called DSUP, D as in David, S-U-P, DSUP, that is, this little water bear creature called tardigrades is endowed with this particular gene that allows it to withstand just all kinds of extreme conditions and survive. It has survived the last, how many extinction events? How many have there been? It survived every single one of them.
Don't know. Lots. Six, eight. Who knows?
Yeah, something like that. And it's resistant to radiation. It's resistant to extremes in temperature. And I know the Chinese have tried to genetically modify a human to have this gene. And, yeah, I think it's easier said than done. Have they succeeded? I don't know. But that would be another interesting attribute to have or try to put into people if you were going to leave this planet and hope to survive.
Right.
And it's interesting to look at the types of cancers that are occurring now following the shots, in some
Another
cases
good
following
point.
The infection.
Yes. These are turbo cancers, and please go
they're
ahead.
They're turbo cancers, but they're resistant to the normal, typical chemotherapy treatments mm-hmm. and radiation. Mm-hmm. And now most chemotherapy kill the cell through a cytotoxic effect, through excessive production of free radicals. It's so excessive that the cell just dies. Radiation, the same thing. You blast it with enough radiation, there's so many free radicals that the cell just can't withstand it, and it dies.
Well, usually.
These cancers aren't...
no.
They're
almost
that.
Oblivious
they have
to
some
it.
Resistance to oxidative stress and radiation. How about that?
Right.
What they do respond to, though, is, well, the ivermectin and the fenbendazole that work through a different mechanism. You know, they work differently between the two of them, but they target components of the cell that, you know, the microtubule polymerization, so that the cell can't reconstruct itself. So it's killing these cancers through a different mechanism, and I believe it's because these cancers are already resistant to severe oxidative stress.
It's strange how that is, but I think you have, again, nailed it. There's something very different about many of these cancers, and David Dees, the brilliant artist, my very close friend for a long time, was stricken with one of these cancers. It would not respond. He then went for radiation treatments, and I think he had 10 treatments in 15 days. And I had power of attorney, and I called when he had finished these 10 treatments. I talked to the head nurse, whatever she is, and I said, well, I'd like a report on what was accomplished with these radiation treatments. And this is state-of-the-art, friends, not just old-fashioned, old-school. This is state-of-the-art radiation, zeroed right in on two tumors in his spine. And she said, well, we really don't understand. I said, what do you mean you don't understand? Radiation will kill tissue. Well, yes, it certainly does. But the tumors that Mr. Dees has did not respond to the radiation at all. In fact, they got bigger. And I'm speechless at hearing this. I couldn't believe it. But that's the truth.
Yeah, that's,
there was something else going on here. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a true story.
Well, they were probably, you know, beta testing this thing to some extent before the actual pandemic. I mean, you can almost bet on it.
Right, right. Yep. It's 3.5 years ago now that David departed. But he had something that was clearly not traditional or normal. And we used to sit and talk about it. And no, he one of the last things he said to me, in a semi-whisper, he said, they killed me. And I said, I know. We had talked about this a number of times, but he was kind of near the end. But he realized it. This was not normal. And what was done to him was done with... If he had been around, and we had been doing what we have been doing with his art for years, we would have put a big dent in this whole charade of vaccine therapy for this so-called COVID virus. We would have ripped it up, and he would have, and I would have posted it. And they didn't want to deal with that, and I think that's why they killed him.
Yeah.
His art was that powerful. He was AI art before there was AI art. He was just a genius at art. Anyway.
A gift.
All right. Yes, a true gift. All right, we have a video here. Anything you want to add to your ponderings and your musings? Very interesting.
No. I'm just thinking out loud. I'm not saying that this is true or anything. It's just thinking out loud.
Right. Okay. Let's see. I've got to cue this back up. It's 7:12. It seems to have gone on its own for some reason. 7:14. That's close enough. All right. This is Dr. Mackus, Dr. Chris Shoemaker. We like Chris Shoemaker as well. And I don't know who the other gentleman is, but...
This is Tony Lones up in Nova Scotia. It's Tony's podcast.
All right, very good. All right, let's take a listen. Here we go. Well, I'm going to have to move it up. Hold on, it seems to have jumped back again. Hold on 1 second. 7:14 again. Let's see if we got. All right, this should work.
11 and 9 at the time, and so they could go for their swimming lessons, and kids 12 and above were not allowed inside to play sports, to swim, to play badminton, unless they had at least 2 COVID-19 vaccines. And the tragedy is that, as I presented at the Injection of Truth, there are 538 children dead in VAERS from the COVID-19 vaccines, Pfizer or Moderna, and we know that there's an underreporting factor anywhere from 30 to 100. Let's say it's an underreporting factor of 30. What's 30 times 500? That's 15,000 children. It's absolutely unacceptable, and children still continue to die. I am still reporting sudden deaths of teenage children on my Substack, on my Twitter account, and it comes back. So now we come back to the political aspect of it. And what happened after the Injection of Truth? And I've said this in my podcasts. The health minister should have held a press conference. And they had the perfect off-ramp. And the health minister could have said, I had no idea that this was going on. I had no idea so many children were being harmed or dying. We're going to launch investigations. We're going to immediately halt the vaccines in children. We're going to protect children. That's all the health minister had to do. And Danielle Smith could have come out with a press conference and said, I give full support to my health minister. In this, we're going to protect children. We stand with children.
When a species no longer stands with children, and this species, and you parents out there understand, and hell, all of you understand, the magic of childhood, the innocence, the fun, the joy, when that is targeted for extermination, we have lost it as a species. And don't expect to survive. You can't. You can't declare war on children and childhood and survive as a species. You can't do it. These children now who are coming up porn-oriented, whatever, they are ruined. They'll never be the same. They've lost the innocence and joy of childhood. That, to me, is pure satanic evil at its worst. And just me talking. Anything else you want to add?
No, I agree. It's just unspeakable. Unspeakable evil.
We are a province that protects and takes care of children. They didn't do it. They didn't have the courage. They didn't have the ethics, the morals to do it, and they had the perfect opportunity. They hid. They stayed silent. They disappeared. They never spoke of the event again.
These people are evil bastards of the worst possible configuration, straight from hell. You cannot do this to children and call yourself human. That's me.
Yep.
And we can't do, we're going to continue to do something about that, like by having this conversation here right now, William, you and I, and hopefully the general public that observes this.
That's Dr. Chris Shoemaker now.
More to their premiers, and not just in Alberta, but to every province in Canada. Imagine for a moment if those QR code cards or proof of vaccination cards had been subtitled likely to die cards. You're 80 times more likely to die if you're vaccinated, but we will let you into the arena. You know, nothing wrong with a little truth, right? That sadly is what the statistics out of Alberta, out of Britain, out of portions of the United States, which have done careful analysis of this, they've all showed a bizarre and a horrible death rate in populations that should have minuscule death rates, short of getting hit by a bus or having cancer as a child or a car accident. You're likely to be alive by the time you're 20. But the death rates in that 0 to 20 group are massively elevated from where they were in 2019, 2020 with no vaccines, and early 2021, no big jump in death rates in children or young adults. Suddenly, April of 2021, when the vaccines have been out 3 to 4 months, amazing statistical scientists around the world, not just Edward Dowd, who knew a great deal, but many others were backing up what he had shown us of probands of people, age groups of people who had no business having an excess death rate increase. Suddenly we're having and are having excess death rate increases. You know, sadly, William, the reasons for the long term, the slow increase in death rates courtesy of cancer. The early death rates are usually due to clotting events in the body that are generated by the lipid nanoparticles themselves, let alone the mRNA. So early deaths are possible, early sudden deaths are possible, indeed probable, and the long term deaths, again, I will defer to you, and perhaps you'd like to make a few comments.
Well, you know, Chris, I mean, you presented at the Injection of Truth about the heart and then, you know, the stress on the heart, and that has long-term ramifications.
I had a story last week about an 11-year-old boy. He was playing some sports on a team with other little kids. Dropped over dead. Massive heart attack. No chance of resuscitating the kid. And this happens. We are being lied to a degree that is almost impossible to understand by this. And when they own the media, they own what most people consider to be reality. And so it's very easy to do.
The fact that everyone's heart is working a lot harder. And, you know, you gave us the evidence of that from the Japanese study, if you want to sort of elaborate on that.
What did the Japanese study, just in short, say about overworking the heart? Because this we've said this for a long time about sludge blood and taxing the heart. Go ahead.
This was the study where they compared vaxxed versus unvaxxed hearts, and it was for people being treated for cancer, I believe. So they were doing a PET scan where they give them a radioactive glucose dye and then image. And usually, normally, only cancer cells will take up the sugar, because that's what cancer feeds on, sugar. But what they were finding was in the people who took the vax, the injections, their hearts were taking up the sugar, which shouldn't be.
Not supposed to be.
And this was only in the vaxxed. It was not in the unvaxxed. And this was not, you know, they weren't having symptoms. They weren't having heart issues. This was, you know, people being treated for cancer. But the hearts were clearly running on sugar. They had a voracious appetite for sugar. Why is that? Well, the heart should be running on fat. Basically, oxidative phosphorylation, where you can make many, many, many more molecules of ATP with fat and oxygen than you can with just sugar. So already there's extreme inefficiency in a heart that's burning sugar. You know, you're going to build up lactic acid and probably have some scarring if that's chronic.
Got it. Yeah. Okay. All right, here we go.
Sure, I'll take a little moment on that. Thanks for that invite. Nakahara was the lead scientist of that, the Nakahara, Dr. Nakahara out of Tokyo, Japan. He led a study that involved radiologic specialists like yourself across the world, Houston, Texas, Mount Sinai Hospital in New York City, and Oxford University. So those three locations, along with Tokyo, not exactly small folks in the pond, big research places with major quality oncology and radiology departments. And when they sussed it out, because they had never seen in a screening test for cancer, why the heck is the heart in some of our patients showing up blackened with high glucose uptake? Why are they looking like a metastatic heart? Why does it look that the heart has cancer? Clearly the heart doesn't have cancer. But in many of our patients right now in 2022 and 2023, we've got a good one-third of our patients seem to have this blackening out of the heart. And when they went in and they did the cross-referencing that's necessary to know, is there a grouping of where there's high glucose uptake, high metabolic extra work by the heart going on? It was determined that fully 100% of this high metabolic rate finding, FDG elevation as it's called, was in the vaccinated patients who were being followed up for their cancers. Suddenly the vaccinated patients had a second problem. The second problem was excess heart activity from 46 to 100% more effort going on month after month after month. Up to 8 months following the jab, there was this terrible elevation of heart rate. The people, not heart rate, heart effort and heart metabolic activity. And that's why it was hidden, William. The person didn't have clinical myocarditis. They weren't complaining of chest pain. They're fine enough. But it was the quiet little canary in the mine shaft, the quiet little blackened evidence on the PET scan studies that showed a heart that was as black in glucose uptake as would be a metastatic tumor.
And that's how
it was extraordinary.
46 to 100% extra exertion by the human heart to push this sludge blood around. And don't forget that the heart has been suffering myocarditis in many cases. Certainly, we've seen the pictures of the spike in the heart, how the immune system goes after the spike, and scar tissue results in the heart. Scar tissue. The heart is being destroyed on several fronts here. It cannot push this sludge through the circulatory system and not expect to pay dearly for it. 46 to 100% more effort. This is astonishing, and it should be horrifying to all of you. You may feel okay, but if you've been injected, your blood is probably dark, it is thick, and your heart is working 46 to 100% more to push that muck around your system. Here.
And that's why people are still dropping dead. People are still dying in their sleep. Young people. Young, otherwise healthy people still dying in their sleep. They're still dying while they're jogging, exercising. We saw a number of athletes at the recent Olympics collapsing. Athletes are still, collapsing on the field and on tennis courts, badminton courts. That's still happening. And it's still being ignored.
I know something that's not being talked about. Car accidents have been in the increase. I've seen that in Nova Scotia. Do you guys think that the jab could be part of that as well?
Well, if a vaccinated bus driver is driving along his bus and just starts to shake and his arm goes up and his head rotates and he goes faint and he collapses and people die because of this bus accident, you can't prove on day one that his heart stoppage or encephalitic brain problem or whatever caused him to collapse. You'd have to do special stainings and prove it. The governments and the pathologists don't want to be told not to do special stainings, not to show that an unexplained death of an otherwise healthy driver of a car or of a bus. What's the reason really? And
vaccidents. We know about vaccidents. If you've been listening to this program, and I'm sure others, vaccidents are becoming more common all the time, and nobody's talking about it. It's just a car accident. It's just a crash. It was a mishap. It was an accident, all right? No, it was a vaccident. It was caused by the damage to the body, to the brain, to the heart. Who knows? There's so many ways that this horror can disassemble life and destroy it.
Indeed. Some people, though, have the presence of mind to pull over. I have heard on the EMT radio there that, they obviously know something isn't right, and they actually pull over.
Well, let that please resonate with all of you. who may be new to the program or who don't take these things as seriously as you might, if you don't feel well, don't drive. If you feel bad while you're driving, pull over and stop. Just do it. These things are worse than you can imagine, and we're being lied to again. They will not tell us the truth. We have to find it on our own. So much for a representative government. No, it's a fraud. We've been overthrown. Yep. The Western world is being taken down. All right, thank you, young lady. Good job, as always. We can do our best, and talk soon.
Okay, thank you, Jeff. Good night, everyone.
Okay. We'll pause on that note, and we will continue after this short timeout.